T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Yeah, Michael's back. You know Michael's back. Oh, it is time for the Mom and Michael Hour. It is my favorite hour out of the four, and I get a chance to visit with my son from Los Angeles. It means a lot to me. How you doing, son?
I am fantastic. How are you?
I'm doing great. I promise I wouldn't ask you if you went to church today, but did you go?
Well, wait, you just said you promised you would.
I did. I told Shaletta, I said, I'm not going to ask him.
You know what, though? Technically, since I was listening to KJLH Radio, which is a radio station here in Los Angeles owned by Stevie Wonder, they broadcasted two different Easter services live on the radio. And I listened to part of those services. So in a way, I actually can say, yes, I did go to church.
So did you? When you say part of, are you talking 30 seconds or are you talking 30 minutes?
30 minutes or more, because I was actually waiting for the gospel music to start after the services. But the services were on. I hadn't heard one in a long time on an Easter Sunday. So I said, you know what? Let me just leave this on.
And what did they talk about? What was the sermon?
It was, you know, that's my challenge with it. It was very run-of-the-mill, very, very basic. I think they were just trying to entice more people to come back to church, maybe.
Do you think that's going to do it? That didn't entice you to get up.
It didn't, no, because obviously Easter and Christmas, they are 2 days when a lot of people who don't go to church end up going to church. So I understand why they took the route of making it so straightforward and so basic and often repetitive at this particular church. But the music wasn't very good. Coming from a musical family, I expected a lot more for Easter Sunday. Moreover, when I was going to church, Easter Sunday was always, it was such a big, uplifting production. You walked out of there feeling like heroes, and therefore you can too. You can overcome anything. The music is upbeat and loud and joyful, and people wear their brightest colors and best, you know, their best outfits, and it just has this intrinsic uplifting element to it that was entirely missing from the service that I heard. Which I'm not sure if that's because of the lead singer on one of the songs was terribly off pitch the whole time, or because it just didn't seem that uplifting. But the DJs afterwards definitely played like the, you know, top 40 of the last 20 years of Easter Sunday recorded gospel songs. I mean, they were just playing all the jams from my teens, from my 20s.
Jams? Sing one for me.
Oh, no, I'm not going to try to do that. But
oh, come on. Just a little piece. I'll sing with you.
No, because I'm not going to know the words, and it's going to be a whole thing. But I purchased several of these songs that I hadn't heard in a long time, and it was really fun. So I played that all day long. I played it going to the movie theater. I played it coming back. There's been gospel music blasting around me all day. It's been an amazing, amazing day. It's been a blast.
Wow. Well, you know, that's really great that you had a good time even recognizing that it was Easter Sunday. I did, too. We had a chance to go to brunch for Easter. I wasn't feeling good this morning, so I didn't make it to church this morning, but I went last night. And I thought about you. I was wondering, you know, I wonder if Michael will look back with some fondness of, you know, Easter Sundays. I remember getting you a green suit, a double-breasted suit when you were young. I think you were in like third or fourth grade at Capitol Hill, and you had to wear it to a tea party or some kind of tea thing that you guys were doing, the guys and the girls. But you wore that on Easter Sunday, and I just wonder if you remember any of that.
I do, and that's actually what I was telling Joey, who, of course, was raised Jewish. And
they're celebrating Passover, of course.
Which, yeah, I went to a Passover Seder Friday evening. But I was telling him what it's like to go to church on Easter Sunday, especially in the black church. But having gone to Catholic schools most of my life, I also have experienced some of that. And I said people bring out their flashiest outfit, like I mentioned before. But especially in black churches, the colors. You'll have a head-to-toe bright lime green suit with matching pockets where lime green shoes or some further extreme example where you have orange shoes and the green pants and a purple jacket. And people
in Minnesota?
Yeah.
What church did you go to? I wasn't there. Were you with your father? That's what it was.
Well, it's not as common, but people definitely get to wear spring colors. And even when I went out today, I had a pink Ralph Lauren polo I was trying to wear again, but I can't wear it. Too small. It doesn't work anymore. But I was pulling out the bright colors, and it's an uplifting Easter spirit. You want to wear bright colors and go out, say hi to people, shake hands, and be around those that you love. So I didn't go to a physical church, but I felt like a lot of the spirit of Easter Sunday that happens in the church, I brought right into my home.
See, now that's exactly what the Gallup poll was talking about, because they did this whole thing about, leaving the church, how many young people, it all started like in 1999. And of course, we remember, Y2K. And, I mm-hmm. talked about this earlier about how the U.S. church membership is down sharply in the past two decades, and that, from all the way up to 1976 and then all the way through 1999, people were going to church. The numbers were increasing. But boy, has that changed. U.S. church membership was 70% or higher from 1937 through 1976, falling modestly to an average of 68% in the 1970s through the 90s. The past 20 years have seen an acceleration in the drop-off, with a 20 percentage point decline since 1999, and more than half of the change occurring since the start of the current decade. Now, you remember Y2K, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you remember how I was so into it. It's like, we have to get to fill up the pantry. It was ridiculous.
Yeah, we all thought our computers were going to shut down. We're going to lose all the information on our computers, which, of course, back then were full-on home stations. There weren't any cell phones like we have now today. We thought the world might collapse and
yeah.
the whole system might shut down for a day or so.
And I wonder if that was the catalyst. I cannot say that it was, but I wonder, because it says in the article, the decline in church membership is consistent with large societal trends in declining church attendance and an increasing proportion of Americans with no religious preference. Then it says the decline in church membership most reflects the fact that fewer Americans than in the past now have not any religious affiliation. Even those who do identify with a particular religion are less likely to belong to a church or other place of worship than in the past. That says it all, doesn't it?
I think it does, but I mean, you and I have kind of touched on this topic before about how people handle religion culturally. And it's interesting because there are so many people when I've broached this very conversation in my social circles or at a party or someone's house, and there are people all over who go to church all the time. It's a standard part of their life. There's people my age, younger, older. So I'm interested to see where the concentration of the unchurched live and how they see themselves in relation to to those in their circles who do have church as a standard part of their life.
Yeah, I would suggest, or at least I would think it would be in the urban areas is where you're seeing the lower numbers.
Hmm.
I would think so. And I have not read the entire article. It's pretty long and it has a lot of data in it, but seriously, and to know that traditionalists born in 1995 or before, they were like steeped in the tradition of going to church. And, baby boomers born in 1946 to 1964, they still have a strong.
Wait, I'm sorry. You said traditionalists born in 95?
1945.
45. Okay.
Yes. And so Generation X, you start to see some big changes, bigger changes. But millennials from 1980 to 2000, if you were born during that time, it's like 42% would go to church from 2016 to 2018.
Wow.
It's just a huge drop. And so it really, to me, begins with your generation. And there was a lot going on in 2000 with the with Al Gore stepping back and conceding and George W. Bush taking office and the wars and 9/11 and so much more. So I think all of that, I think it was just this gigantic pool that came together and has just discouraged. And then I think the advent of Facebook and social media had something to do with it, too, because now you can go to church online. You can pay your tithes online. You can watch TV or listen to the radio. You don't have to have butts in the seats.
Also, going off of that social media comment, that, of course, we have, you know, Tinder and other apps. That's changed how we date and at its core how we actually socialize at large. So I wonder how much of that is people would go to church not just for religious purposes, but also to meet other people who are like-minded.
Right.
And now that we can do so on an app, right on our phone without leaving home, maybe we've lost some of the drive to build those circles in a physical location.
So do you think the move for the future is to, you know, there won't be churches where you go into the building, that you will receive it in a different way? You know, they have ministries now where you can go into a bar. Well, you can go out into the ocean. If you got your boat in the summertime, they're not going to be in church. So the preachers get on a boat and go out and meet them and gather up some boats and have a sermon. I remember when I was in Hawaii, you know, outside of my patio door, right on the ocean, right there on the beach, man, just steps away. I hear this gospel music, this guy playing a guitar and singing, you know, contemporary gospel music or contemporary Christian music. And they're having service in their bikinis and laying on their towels and, you know,
wow.
They pass a plate around or a bowl around if you'd like to give. And that was that. And I sat out and watched the whole thing. And I went, wow, we are redefining church.
Yeah, I think that's what it'll be. Church will, I think, come back big. Because we become so distant from each other and from ourselves, those my age and younger, I should say, because of the apps, as I mentioned earlier. That I think as we start to get older, first point, socially, when people get older, they tend to go back to the religion in which they were raised. So as a shift begins to happen with my generation, we might not call it church, it might not be called Christianity in the way that we know those two things today, but I think we're going to be yearning for places to commune in person, at a central place, at a set time, you know, where we aren't on demand, we aren't streaming live on Netflix our religion or our social interactions, and that there will be a pre-existing social construct that allows us to give in to showing up together and being together in person to do something together. I think we're going to go into that really hard because we're going to burn out from years and years and years of being separated by social media.
Yeah, and how we look at what a minister is or what a pastor is, how you define that, do you think that will change as well?
I mean, Kanye West now has his Kanye West Sunday services, which I believe he brought that to Coachella both weekends, and all the Kardashian family is there with him, and there are these huge outdoor concerts where it's him and like a 50-person choir, band, sound team, cameras, the whole thing, and they sound amazing. The quality of the voices, the mixing, the arrangement of the music itself is the quality that you would see on his albums, and it's like a gospel hybrid with songs that we know and also mixed with beats from his previous songs and mixed with lyrics from pop and R&B songs that are then interpreted differently to seem more Christian. So that you have a person as insane as Kanye West and people as backwards as the Kardashians being on the forward edge of a church experience. Yeah, I think anything is possible.
Anything is possible. Yeah, in fact, it says in the Christian Post that it was reported that Conway West, always getting into something new, has been conducting what he's calling Sunday services at his home. The services seem like religiously themed weekly concerts where he appears to be performing gospel versions of old songs. These songs either already have a gospel vibe to them or are reworked to fit the theme. And he invites others like Kid Cudi, is that his name?
Kid Cudi.
Yeah. 070 Shake and Tony Williams to perform alongside him. And there's always a very large choir, as you said, that wears Yeezy sweats instead of traditional robes while they sing under blue and red lighting, and creating an atmosphere closer to that of a nightclub than the Baptist church that many were raised in.
Yeah, but they sound amazing.
Right.
You should go watch these videos. I mean,
no, I'm looking forward to it. But what is really something to me is that his wife, they say, is studying law right now. You know, her father was one of the most famous lawyers in America defending, I just lost his name. O.J. Simpson. Thank you, dear.
Simpson, yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, she's kind of shadowing another lawyer and learning the hoops. So, you know, here we are watching this couple redefine themselves again. My thing is, you know, when Snoop Dogg brought the choir to town for the Super Bowl, and he has a gospel mm-hmm. album, right? And a lot of people that were in that audience that night were kind of trying to figure out, well, what is this? So as they're, as you're redefining what gospel is, that's the one thing about church is you start messing with the music too much. You know, you got a lot of generations involved in that. So people going to have a fit. But you have to reclaim what it is and figure out where it's going.
Right. And sorry to interrupt you there. I think changing music has always been at the forefront of change in religion. So with my generation in the 90s, it was Kirk Franklin. Right. And his music was kind of this R&B pop, forward, youthful gospel music. And it was decidedly Christian. There was nothing about it that was not Christian. But the old folks, as we call them, couldn't stand him. They thought his music was sinful, and they felt like that was not the future of church and that my generation was insane for loving this artist.
Yeah.
Now, one of the biggest Christian artists in the world. I mean, he's sold millions of albums around the world. And now he's considered more old school compared to what's coming out now. So I'm actually excited to see that the changes are happening in music, because that tends to usher people into a new generation in terms of being churched.
Well, I think when you talk about the old people, quote unquote, I think when you have a gospel artist that's on stage grabbing his private, like Michael Jackson did, and singing gospel music, I don't know. There's going to be a whole lot of folks that don't get that. I don't care if they are traditionalist millennials or, you know, Generation Z. I don't care. They're going to look at that and go, why are you grabbing your crotch? What is that?
Right. Yeah,
you singing about Jesus or God or love and peace, and all of a sudden you hee hee and you grabbing stuff. I mean, help me understand that.
That's obviously an extreme example where it truly doesn't go together, and it does seem contrived and deeply false. But I do think that when people find novel ways to bring faith into arts, it opens new doors to bring people back into the folds of the church.
Well, the folds look very different, don't they?
Extremely so.
Wow. You going next Sunday?
Are you?
if I say yes, will you say yes?
If Kanye's in town, I'll drive to Calabasas to do that, because the videos I've seen, that concert is amazing. So if I get an invite to that show, to his Sunday gospel choir concert, I'll go to that for sure.
So if Trump comes to town and he becomes a preacher and he's got a choir, would you go see him?
Absolutely not.
I don't understand because I think Kanye West is nuts.
He's insane.
And you would drive to see a man talking. Oh, really?
But really, okay. So you got to go watch the video, because the musicality of it is on such an incredible level. I have to acknowledge that he's using his talents to do something novel. I've never seen someone do what he's doing in the way that he's doing it, especially not on the scale that he was doing it before.
Just because it's novel does not mean it's good.
But I think the result...
For the people, I mean.
Yeah, I think it's good for the people because of the result. The end product, and even just the crowd reaction, I think is important. I think it's doing something. I think it's changing the conversation about what it means to have a church experience like we're having right now. I don't think that he should maybe not be the progenitor of that conversation. They shouldn't be in the forefront of it, but that they are the catalyst right now in some way. I think that's interesting.
Your mother will show up at Coachella, whatever they call it. Your mother will show up if you tell me. Yeah, there you go, Coachella. If you show up to go see Kanye West, you know, and I want to hear his gospel music, you know, and you getting all into it. And I, honestly, I'd have to come get you. Like, okay, let me bring you some new Kool-Aid.
But that's a really interesting point, because so many of the leaders of churches have fallen from grace. They are worse than Kanye.
And you're not following any of them.
Correct, and yet they still do have followers. So
yeah, but you're talking about getting in the car to go drive to go see and hear this.
But that I feel
see the video
by the result of someone who is controversial to say the least, especially
no, not controversial, honey. He's nuts.
Well, but he's in a pedophile.
People
go to Catholic churches all the time. So I mean, he's better than many of the pastors and preachers and leaders out there that are still operating. So in the gradations of those leading churches, he should be examined as someone who's doing something different, that maybe we should ask ourselves, why don't we want to follow him? Why should we follow him? And that conversation might be the very thing that rebirths the church in a new way.
Let us pray. Oh, my God.
You know?
I mean, you make a great point. I'm not going to argue with you. I'm just going to go to break.
All right.
Deal?
Deal.
I'm coming to California.
Okay.
I'm coming with my Bible. I got to find it. I'm going to come with my Bible. I'm not kidding. Hey, look. I'm coming. We're going to go to church together.
Yes. There's only two weekends at Coachella, but maybe he'll do a third weekend just for you.
I'm not trying to come. Look, do you not hear me? I am not trying to go see the sick.
The sick?
I'm not.
That's what they said about Kirk Franklin. So what does that make
he
you?
He grabbed his crotch, son.
Kirk Franklin did?
Yes. This is what I'm telling you.
And what happened?
He's still on. He hosted the Stellar Awards tonight.
Right, but did it lower his sales? Are people less? Do people believe in God less? Is his music less impactful? Is his music less inspirational?
Okay, so now you hit my demographic. You're telling me I'm not the demographic. That's what you just said.
But that's the very conversation. Is we have to look at our judgment of the new movements and the thing that we call church, and see them for what they are and their impact versus how they compare to what was previously effective and clearly is no longer effective.
We are going to church. I'm bringing some holy water, some blessed oil, praying cloth, one of those Bibles that look like they've been used since, 1890.
The edges are all frayed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Not playing.
Yes.
I'm coming, son.
Power, power. Wonderful.
You started talking about you would. Oh, no, you didn't.
It's in the blood.
Oh, don't play on Easter. You still got a couple hours.
I know. I heard that song this morning. I'm just saying.
Sing it with me. Sing it with me. This is a good time.
You sing it.
There is power, power, wondering working power in of the Lamb. Oh, there is power, power. Wondrous working power in the precious blood of it. How come you're not singing?
I'm enjoying you singing.
Aw.
It's beautiful.
I'm coming with my Bible, my geriatric shoes. You need to look for your mama.
And a Martin Luther
King fan. I'll be Vaseline down and a Martin Luther King fan.
A Martin Luther King fan. That's
with the funeral on the funeral chapel.
And a stick as a wooden stick as a handle? Yes.
I'm telling you, you know better.
But I would love that. I would love you to come here, and we could do like a tour of church experiences.
Okay.
And we can go to a Passover Seder. We can go to a more contemporary church, which there are some really contemporary churches here that have big buildings, and everyone is gorgeous and kind of famous, and it's a little creepy. I'm not
going there.
But
say creepy, I'm running the other way.
No, by creepy, I mean it is a very Hollywood version of church. But the people who go there, I've met many of them, they're very sincere, deeply Christian, very open, affirming, come as you are. But these are big, big churches right here in Hollywood. But there's famous people there, and there's a lot of actors there.
I'm not looking for that. I'm looking for safety. I'm looking for refuge
for
my son.
Why. That's exactly why we would have to go, because the people who are attending church in Hollywood are finding the things that your generation found in church as we know it, but in a very different way. So we would have to go experience that to see and to get to see the future of church through that lens and understand the possibilities of where it might go.
Okay, good enough. I'm coming. That's it.
Right.
We got to take a break. We'll be back in a moment. It is now 10:37 here at WCCO. We're going to let this play for a minute, remind Michael of who he is. So hold on. You remember Michael?
Oh, of course.
Of course?
I love that song.
I do too.
That's like my childhood right there. I love that.
Right, between that and Give It All Back to Me.
Yeah. I went and found that song on YouTube and texted the link to Venice because I knew, I was like, she'll get this. Easter Sunday, that song right there is going to encapsulate our childhood.
Right, exactly.
I sent her a few songs.
You know, that was my way of warming up before performance. You know, I remember we were, Javita and I and Debbie Duncan were performing at Mixed Blood Theater. And after church, you know, I would turn that song on and just pull over on the highway sometimes just to get it in my system so I would be ready to perform, you know. I loved it. I loved the lyrics.
You played that tape. Andre Crouch, you had the tape in your car. You put that in. You played that ad nauseum. I mean, we were so sick of it.
You were sick of it?
Oh, we couldn't stand it.
Well, that's the first I've ever heard of that. It cannot be.
No, the Andre Crouch tape, oh my gosh, it drove me crazy. I always complained every time you played it. But that's the funny part about it, rather the irony, is that you get older, and now I have this warm nostalgia associated with that, the music on that tape, and you, and those wonderful years. So now I like it.
Wow, that's amazing. I mean, you really couldn't stand Fortune House, where we ate at, over in St. Paul. You used to say all the time,
so
you know, what did you say?
I remember that. I'm not going to say that. That was gross.
Okay. Well, you know.
I was basically saying I'm going to hurl if we go. But, yeah, we just ate a lot of it, and it was good food. I just couldn't take it anymore.
You could not take it. I thought you were going to stand in the middle of the restaurant and just spin around. You just could not take it. It's just like your father would say, Fortune House, we're going to go there for dinner. You go, no.
Because of that, I stopped eating Chinese food for about 8-9 years.
Really?
I kid you not. After I moved to LA, I think I had Chinese food 2 times in the first 5 years.
Wow.
I just stopped eating it. Now I love it again. Now it's great.
Wow.
You know?
Yeah, it was a staple for us when we didn't feel like cooking or we were too tired. It was like, let's go to the Fortune House. I wonder if it's still there. I'm sure it's not.
I think I've driven past, and it might actually still be
there. Right off of 36 and Rice Street, I think.
I think maybe.
I
have to look it up. I think it might still be there. We were regulars. We'd come in and, oh, hey, here's your table.
Yeah, they did. The battles are here.
Yeah.
Oh, man. When everybody knows, hi.
Yeah, hi.
It's like, you should stop.
Yeah. Would you like the usual?
Hey, I saw your cousin today at Crave where we had our brunch, Easter brunch.
Khalil.
Yes, yeah. And he's just fantastic. Just love him. Love him. So,
that's amazing.
Do you have any news you want to report on how things are going for you?
Not yet.
Okay. All right. Well, you'll let us know when you are ready.
What? Well, I can say that I have a new day job, which is great, but I'm not saying where it is yet.
Right, and so, I don't blame you. I wouldn't either. But at least you're
set.
Yeah, you're pretty happy. So
yeah.
I'm happy for that, Michael. That's a blessing. Look at the blessings that God is giving you, and you haven't been to
Absolutely.
Church.
Absolutely, it's a beautiful thing, and that it happened Passover weekend, Easter weekend. I think we've overcome and risen above. So it was a beautiful weekend overall.
All right, Michael, well, you know what time it is, right? Because I know you went to go see a movie, right?
Little, yes.
Oh, you went to go see a movie. Now, earlier today, you told me you were not going to see a movie.
Well, I found time.
You did?
Look at God.
Really? You found time to go to the movie theater, but not church?
I didn't think I was going to be able to see the movie because of all the church and the music and friends in town and maybe going to a pool party. But that didn't happen. So I went to go see a movie.
All right. Well, you know what time it is. Here we go.
Because when you do what you love, you're going to love what you do. You know I do it with love.
We made it, right?
It's that I do it for you. It's the dirty work.
Yep, it's the dirty work, and Michael loves it out there in Hollywood. That wasn't quite the transition I was looking for. Gelada! Mike Battle.
It's interesting because the beginning of the other song actually works at the beginning of that song.
Oh, no. Everyone went. She's over here fussing at me tonight, Michael. She's just fussing. What is it? Lord, help us.
I liked it. I think it sounded cool having the two songs kind of mixed. It was a good thing.
She's DJ Schletter. DJ Brundage. Gone, girl. Okay, Michael. You went to go see something called Little.
Little, a movie that came out last week, and that produced by Will Packer Productions, of course, the billion-dollar producer, who's made a whole slew of films, mostly starring African-American actors and stories that pertain to African-American families, but much more elevated than the Tyler Perry fare we used to get in the previous decade. Starring Issa Rae, which is pretty cool because she's now switched over into movies, and produced by, written by Tracy Oliver, who's a buddy of mine. Regina Hall is starring in this one also, and Marsai Martin from the TV show Blackish plays the young girl in this movie. And she's also a producer on this movie.
She's really fierce. That girl is something else. What's the name of the series that she does too, where she's a young girl? I guess
Blackish.
She changed. Oh, that's Blackish?
Wait. So a young girl, she changes what now, where?
Well, yeah, it was a movie, I thought, or it was a series. I can't think of it. Anyway, isn't she the one that was an adult and then her mother wished her to be small again or something and she became like a tween? 11 years old or 12 years old. Do I have it wrong?
So that's this movie.
Oh, that's the movie?
What's that?
Oh, hello.
Is it called Little?
That's the one called Little. Okay.
It's called Little because obviously it's a change-up of Big, the classic film where someone makes a wish and this adult evil boss who used to be a nerd and grew up to be this intensely rich and powerful woman running her own company, but she's just mean. Everyone can't stand her. She's mean. She's mean to the wrong magical child, and she gets wished into her younger self, and of course, hilarity ensues from there. So, but she's a producer on this because she actually pitched this to King of Bears. He and his wife are producers here in Hollywood, and they brought this to Will Packer. So from this, she got an overhead deal, I believe, with Universal Studios, and she's the youngest actor ever to get their own overhead deal.
And how old is she?
She first pitched this at 10, I think. Now she's 13.
You know, I saw her do the interview on The Daily Show with Trevor Noah. She was remarkable.
She truly is, yes.
It was just really impressive. So well done.
Well done in getting the film made and at her age, producing something of this caliber and having her name on it as a producer, starring in it, and being part of that whole process, and making a decent amount of money on this. It made $29 million so far in the U.S. on this picture, which again they only spent 20 on the production budget, so that's pretty good. Worldwide, they're at $34 million, so it isn't a huge box office success, but it has done moderately well enough for this thing to eventually, in a few weeks, potentially make their full investment back. But I do think that downstream with OTT, EST, and VOD, to use all the buzzwords, they can recoup more of their investment on the film.
Film is at number 5 right now. So
currently at number 5, yes. I think it opened at number 3 when it first came out. But again, it came out last weekend. This is the second weekend. So it's at number 5. It'll probably leave the top 10 a little bit faster because of Avengers coming out next weekend, and that's going to be a 4-quadrant monster, likely the biggest opening of a film ever in history. So we'll see how that affects all of the films currently in the top 20.
Wow.
But the trailer for Little, I'm not sure if you've seen it.
Yes,
but I
have.
You have, because you described the plot. Mm-hmm. The trailer is hilarious.
Yes, it is.
Really, really strong. I was really excited to see this movie, hoping that it would be as strong and as hilarious as the trailer was. Unfortunately, it doesn't really deliver in that way. Many of the best jokes are in the trailer. The film itself is just a little bit slow. There's times where it really, it drags. It's not as funny. And again, you vamp up to the jokes in the trailer, which those are still funny in the movie. There are a couple moments that aren't in the trailer that are funny, but they seem like standalone pieces as opposed to gems in an overall well-done picture. It's not a bad movie. I was entertained. The premise, is interesting enough to kind of keep you involved, but it's not one that I would rush to go see again, or I would stop and watch if it came on TV later on. So,
would you have been more entertained if you had seen it on television for free?
I think yes. If I made less of a commitment to this film, I would have had more space for it.
Yeah.
To say, this is not that funny. I don't have to pay that much attention. But the ease of it is nice. Yes, it's nice to watch at home. But since it is released in theaters and there's a big team behind it, I kind of expect it to have a stronger punch to it. And this is twice now because What Men Want, the film that came out a few weeks ago that I talked to you about, had the same problem. But the trailer was exponentially funnier than the film itself, so much so that the trailer had jokes that were actually slightly different than they were in the real film. And that one just, you know, completely dragged and wasn't very funny at all. This film is much better than that. I will say, if you're going to choose between What Men Want and Little is your best bet.
Mm-hmm.
The strange part is that the film is PG-13, and I read an article with Will Packer talking about how they wanted to make a product that was edgy enough for the 13-year-old of today, because obviously kids today are different than they were a generation ago, as he mentioned in the interview, and also a film that adults are going to want to go see and bring their 13-year-old with them. And what you get is this very interesting hybrid where I'm in the theater with adults and we're laughing at jokes that have a very adult edge to them, but then there are kids. Now, maybe those kids were 13 years old, 14 years old. To me, they look very young, and some of those moments did not seem appropriate at all for them. Maybe that's my age showing, but I don't know how knowledgeable kids are these days, but
very.
It just didn't seem like...
Just ride on a bus. Just get on a school bus if you can. If you know a friend,
right, but,
just say, can I ride on the school bus with you? Because I'm telling you, it's a whole nother education.
There's scenes where she's a kid and she wants to drink wine or flirt with an adult man, or it's just, there was something about having this young person around sexualized moments that was really, it was just kind of weird. If it had all been adults, and it, or if it was an R-rated comedy, I would have had more space for that. He said, oh, well, this is just edgy funny. But that there were actually young people in the audience. It just, something about it didn't sit right with me. So that bothered me. But overall, I enjoyed the movie. I just wouldn't pay money to see it in theaters again.
Wow, that says a lot. And that's at number five. It's made some money, foreign money, but not much. Now, you really did not like Dumbo at all, which is a Tim Burton. He directed that one. But it's made a whole lot of money.
It has. It's Disney. It's a well-known property. It's 100 years old, as we mentioned before. They spent $170 million in making the movie, though. And so, yeah, domestic made $101, which for a Disney property that actually is not great, because some of their films open to $100 million. So that domestic number is incredibly low for a film of this size. Foreign, it made an additional $206 million for a worldwide total, according to Box Office Mojo, of $307 million. So that's a decent amount. But again, on a film of this size, with the P&A budget that they have on these big tentpole films, this thing is probably still very much in the red, and it's probably not going to go into the black unless it makes another $50-plus million. So it'll get there. It's fine. It's going to be out on DVD. It's going to be on EST. You know, it'll be on Disney Plus, which will launch later on this year. It'll make money down the road and be some thing that people will want to have access to on Disney Plus. But the film itself is woefully underwhelming.
Wow. All right, Michael, we got to take a break and we'll come back with our final thoughts in just a moment. Well, we have about 30 seconds left, Michael. It's such a pleasure having you on tonight, honey. Thank you for joining me.
Always love being on. Happy Easter. He is risen, and it's a pleasure talking with you.
Great to have you on, honey. I love you. I'll call you later.
All right, I love you, too.
All right. Just want to remind you that I will be at the Dakota this coming Thursday night at the Dakota. All you have to do is go to dakotacooks.com, or you can visit the WCCO Radio Twitter and Facebook pages as well. WCCO Radio Twitter and Facebook pages. It's been a wonderful night with you. Enjoy. Good night. The blood.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.